If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm tired of these dirty old cities. Been tired of too much work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with my beat partner, Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we appreciate their support for our Journal Sentinel coverage of the Green Bay Packers. Well, Bob, we'd like to welcome everybody into our post-draft podcast. Some of them probably suffered through our 1 a.m. debacle there in the bowels of Lambeau Field after Kenny Clark was taken with the 27th overall pick. And now we're going to wrap up everything else from the second-round picks all the way through the undrafted guys. And good to have you here, Bob, in the penthouse, as you
would
say.
We're at the Cohen penthouse.
Yes, yeah. The fourth floor penthouse here.
It's a wonderful Thursday morning, Mike.
It is. We're finally getting some spring weather, aren't we?
55 degrees. Supposed to be 81 in Green Bay, Packerville tomorrow.
I know.
Yep.
That's not a bad day to watch some minicamp outside.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or skip minicamp and play golf.
I think that minicamp's going to be inside.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately.
That's depressing. Why?
It always has been.
Really?
Yeah, it's not open to the fans, and they go inside the Hudson Center, yeah.
Man, I really hope it's outside. That would be nice.
Very much, yeah.
All right, well, talk us through the musical selection here.
Mr. Merle Haggard. So we're offering a tribute to Merle, who passed away on April 6th on his 79th birthday. My brother, who's a connoisseur of country music, several times told me that Merle had the best voice in country music.
I couldn't tell you. I'm not a country fan, so I don't have anything to offer in that regard.
He did 3 years of time in San Quentin.
Did he?
Yeah.
For what?
Burglary, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Like age 18 or something like that. And he got out and kind of turned his life around completely. I think he had 40 number one hits.
Wow.
And Big City was one of them. Just a kind of a lighthearted song that I like. So-called Social Security.
So that's what we had, was Big City,
yep,
by Merle Haggard.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. So Merle's gone, one of the great ones. We lost Johnny Cash, you know, a few years ago, and Waylon Jennings kind of in that outlaw genre. And I never saw Merle Haggard.
No.
It's quite a regret. Yep.
Well, we appreciate that little tribute after I was allowed to pay tribute to Prince last week. So it was only fair that Bob got the... got the chance to choose the music this week, and what else is going on, Bob? Here's an interesting one, and I'm sure many of our fans will get a kick out of this. I've slowly but surely piqued Bob's interest in the English Premier League. Now, many of you know that I'm a soccer fan. I tweet often about soccer when I'm not tweeting about the Packers, and I watch every weekend. I play fantasy English Premier League as intensely as many of you, I'm sure, play fantasy football. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I watch it all the time. And this year, because of Leicester City, the 5,000-1 underdogs to win the title, because of them and their achievements, I sort of got you a little interested, didn't I, Bob?
Yeah, it's a great thing, Mike. Yes, you have. And it's been kind of busy the last 5 weeks for me, Mike. But I even found time late at night, one night, about 1 a.m., to watch my tape of some Leicester stuff. And as you described it, the greatest upset season in professional sports history in the world.
I mean, it has to be, I think. I mean, you look at just some of the other long shots. I was reading that the U.S. Olympic hockey team to upset the Soviet Union in, what was it, 1980, right?
Yep.
Was a 1,000-1 underdog. You know, you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, one of the worst teams in the NBA. They were a 1,000-1 underdog to win the NBA title this year. And then you look at Leicester, 5,000-1. I mean, this was a team that was in last place for the majority of last season. Hmm. They didn't really change much of their personnel. Hmm. And then they come out, and not only do they win the league, but they win it with 2 weeks to spare, and they were at the top of the table almost all season. So it's a remarkable story. The first time they've ever won in the 132-year history of the franchise. And And I'm just glad that you actually appreciate some of the pageantry that comes with the games, with the songs and the crowd and the stadium and the craziness and
the presence, the presentation on NBC, the announcer, the quick interviews at the end, the nice 2-hour time slot, games fly by, the shots of the crowd. It's really good stuff. It really is.
And you didn't necessarily watch soccer, but you had somewhat of a general interest from watching Charlie when he was in high school, right?
Right. My son played at DePere High School. Let me mention this, Mike. When I was growing up in the 60s, the North American Soccer League started in about 63, 64. Okay.
Somewhere in there.
And I remember that, you know, we were in our early teens. We had no idea. There was no recognition of any worldwide soccer for us living up in our little isolation. And I remember, we didn't even have a soccer ball, but we were about 14 or 15, and somehow we decided to play soccer in the midst of all our basketball, football, okay, baseball craziness.
Okay.
But we had no idea how to kick the ball or anything, and so we were using our hands and our feet.
Okay.
I remember this. We played for about 2 hours, and we just said, no, it's not for us. You know?
Did your high school have a soccer team?
No.
Really?
I don't think there's any soccer in the UP even now.
Oh, come on. There has to be.
Summer youth sports, but no high school soccer, I don't believe.
How is that possible? That's crazy to me. I grew up in a part of the state where there was no high school football, but everyone had soccer.
Yeah.
We used to get between 1,000 and 1,500 people to our soccer games in high school.
Wow.
It was great.
That's big.
It was awesome.
So then my son started playing at age 5 just to get him into stuff, and then he became a good player in high school, and I came to really love the game, the physical aspect of it, and I really liked it, and I miss seeing live soccer. Yep.
I told Bob that next season at some point, the Premier League usually runs from about August until May. At some point, we'll have to get together and watch a game so that I can talk him through it a little bit. We went to a UWGB game, and you were picking my brain the way I pick your brain about the Packers, asking all kinds of stuff.
What are guys doing? What's that formation? What's the alignment?
Yeah.
What's the thinking here?
It was fun.
It
was fun. For once, I felt like I knew what I was talking about.
But
enough about soccer. We've got plenty to talk about when it comes to the Packers. And let's jump right into it with the second round, since we've already discussed Kenny Clark. The Packers traded up, something that Ted Thompson has done with more frequency in the last few years, and they decide to take Jason Spriggs, an offensive tackle from Indiana, 4-year starter, very experienced. I think he made 47 career starts, played a ton of left tackle for Indiana. What'd you make of the trade, and what'd you make of the pick?
I like the trade. I really did like the trade. They're sitting down at 57. The board is getting wiped out of those first 16 guys taken in the second. 12 would have fit Green Bay. I mean, all these D linemen, all these inside backers, the tight end Henry, just all wiped out. And I'm sure there was panic in that Green Bay locker room. I said, you know, sweat rings under the armpits. That's the way it goes, man. This is brutal stuff. I've talked to so many GMs over the years about this. And so Ted moved up from 57 to 48. He gave a 4 and a 7 to do it, and he took the last, what we think to be the last guy who can really play at tackle in this draft, Spriggs of Indiana.
If he had not taken Spriggs, or excuse me, if the Packers had not traded up for Spriggs, where does Spriggs end up going, do you think? How much longer would he have lasted on the board?
Just a couple picks.
Yeah, they needed to do it if they wanted him.
I mean, I almost put him in my first round, again, because
I thought about it.
I mean, you know, the tackle group was good, first 6 names, and then pretty bad.
Yep.
All right, let's say what would Green Bay have done at 57?
Yeah,
I've never
looked
at this till right now, Mike.
Okay.
All right, so there, TJ Green went there, cornerback safety. They wouldn't have taken him.
They could have been interested in Cody Whitehair.
But he would have been gone ahead.
But I'm just saying, in that area.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Let's go back after 57.
Okay.
Sean Davis, no. Aguayo, the kicker, no. Cyrus Jones, the punt returner, no. Von Bell, no. Bradbury, no. Gotsis, maybe. The Aussie 5 technique was injured, but might have been. Now we're in the third round.
Carl Nassib might have been intriguing to them. You think?
No.
Really? Why?
I think he's a 4-3 DE more.
Oh, okay.
Too weak.
Okay.
Turek, no. Malik Collins, maybe, is another Mike Daniels pass rusher. Probably not. No on the Maryland guy. Bronson Kafusi maybe is a 5 tech. So now we're down to 70.
How about Kenyon Drake? Just throw one last name out there.
Running back.
He can catch
returner.
It out of the ball now?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Bullard, I think, maybe is another 5 tech. I say Kafusi or Bullard.
Okay. So it was getting thin.
It definitely was. And so it's a good trade.
So just, you know, real quick, we were just flipping through this. The next tackle taken after Spriggs was Sean Coleman. So I know that you and I have talked about him a decent amount because I was familiar with him. He's from Memphis, and obviously I worked there for a while. How much of a difference and what is the difference between Spriggs and Coleman?
Well, while Coleman is a leukemia survivor, he also has a bad knee. He's got a lot of medical questions. Spriggs has no medical questions. Spriggs ran 4.91. I mean, Coleman's not a bad athlete, but...
And for reference, he ran 4.91 and Richard Rodgers ran 4.87.
Correct. I think there's a big difference between Spriggs and Coleman. And he generally was regarded as the next tackle. And that's what the Packers were looking at.
Okay. So if that's who they wanted, they would have had to do exactly what they did.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, okay, Spriggs is undersized. There's no doubt about it. He's what he told us, I think he's 305 or 306 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But he's played at Indiana at 295 at times. You know, you look at, you know, what the Packers have. Bulaga's 321. Bakhtiari's about 315, 316. You know, obviously he needs to put on weight. But do you think he can actually play left tackle or right tackle? I mean, some people thought he might have to move inside. I don't know. He's too tall to move inside, but
yeah, I don't see his strength, robust level, fitting for guard.
Okay.
I don't see it, Mike. Now that may change. I mean, I've never seen him at guard. Nobody has. I'm sure James Campen will stick him there for maybe a week or so of this training camp. That's what he's been. That's been his history. I just see him as a left tackle, right tackle.
Okay. Better suited for one or the other, left or right?
Just because he's played left. I mean, left.
Right.
Right tackle's more of a hard run blocker, you know, in the stereotype. He's not really a go-for-the-throat run guy.
Okay.
So I think he's more of a left.
Fair enough. Anything else on Spriggs?
No.
All right, let's move on. So in the third round, with the 88th overall pick, the Packers took Kyler Fackrell, a 3-4 outside backer who's played 3-4 outside backer at Utah State. He is very tall. What is he, 6'5"? 6'5", extremely tall for an outside backer. Now, obviously, Julius Peppers is an exception to almost all of these things when we talk about size for an outside linebacker. You know, he's got good size, good weight at 245. What's his 40 there, Bob?
4.65. He can run, Mike.
He can run. Now, a lot of people, this is one thing that I discussed with you because you know this stuff better than I do. A lot of people are saying he's got really, really long arms. But you and I were talking about how for 6'5", he might not actually be as long as he would if he was 6'2 or 6'3. In other words, his arm length doesn't correspond as well with a 6'5 frame as it does to a 6'2 frame. So what's he got for arms, Bob?
Right. He's got 33. At 6'5", Noah Spence, who's 6'2.5", he's got 33-inch arms. So, no, his arms aren't long.
Okay.
He can run, Mike. He's 4'6", 5", and he's tall, and he's played in the 3-4 defense.
Now, I know he had a big knee injury, but were there any questions about his knee? You know, he suffered a torn ACL in what would have been his junior year. He came back in 2015 as a senior and played the whole season, but there were some scouts, when I read your draft series, that said he wasn't quite the same player.
True. I've never heard anybody question the surgery or the condition of the knee, but they say he didn't move as well in space, didn't drop as well. And the feeling is, you know, if you're an optimist, you'll say that he'll move better this coming season and succeeding years. What doesn't he have, Mike? He doesn't have strength.
Yeah, that was alarming. And he admitted that, which I was actually a little bit surprised at. That was the first thing he listed as a weakness, he said, was upper body strength.
You know... He doesn't have power. I don't know if he can beat a tackle as a pass rusher. Some say, talk to scouts again in the last 3 or 4 days. I mean, some think he can vehemently. Some vehemently say he can't. He was the 12th 3-4 outside rusher selected in a draft that didn't have many outside threats. You have to gamble to get a rusher. There's no question about it. I think Thompson did gamble here. You know, it's a position where you gamble at. I get that. You got to have rush. Green Bay doesn't have enough of them. I don't know if it's going to work or not.
Would he have been taken higher if he was a year or two younger? He's going to turn 25 in November.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I don't really think so, Mike.
It's just amazing to me that there's legitimately a four-year age difference between Kenny Clark and Kyler Fackrell. Yeah. Kenny Clark's 20 years old, can't buy a beer. Kyler Fackrell turns 25 in November.
Yeah, it's really something, isn't it? Yeah, it's a big difference. What else about Fackrell? 3-year starter, married, good kid, mature, yep. Obviously.
Yep, has a child.
Yeah. To me, and I've run this by some scouts, he's a 4-3 Sam, Mike. That's what I see him as, you know? And then those 4-3 Sams nowadays, they get replaced on passing downs. They kind of do, unless you're a tremendous rusher and you can play with your hand down and stay on the field. But, you know, you don't cover as a 4-3. They get rid of those. The 4-3 Sams go and sit down. They play 40%. That's kind of what I thought he was. He's not that big. You know, I like these 255, 265 outside backers, you know? The Mike Neal, the Dayton Jones, Matthews is big, Peppers is big. I love those kind of guys.
Even Perry's a little big.
He sure is. And this guy, maybe he gets to 250. I just don't know how he's going to win. It'd be very, very fun to see.
That's kind of my question, too, is if he – and he even said that he relies almost exclusively on speed right now. But can you win with speed if there's a tackle that even gets just one hand on you and slows you down? Because if he doesn't have that upper body strength and he has enough speed to get around the tackle, but if the tackle gets a hand on you, I don't know if he can get all the way home. You know, I don't know. It's – that was probably one of the picks that I was not a big fan of.
Yeah. You sized it up perfectly at the end, Mike. Let's move on.
All right. So now we move into the fourth round. And finally, to the dismay, I guess, of some fans and the delight of others, depending on what you thought of the pick, Ted Thompson addresses the inside linebacker position. It took him until the 131st pick. He takes Blake Martinez, an inside backer from Stanford, massively productive, 141 tackles. His average tackles, I think, were something like 10.5 per game. It led the Pac-12. And the guy was productive. What'd you make of Mr. Martinez?
You know, he was taken right where Jake Ryan was taken last year. 129, Ryan was 131. He was taken right after Kwiatkowski of West Virginia, after Joe Schobert. All these people have the exact same height, weight, 40 time. I mean, they're all basically the clones. He played in a 3-4 defense. He played in a real good program, successful program. He runs pretty good. Size is okay. They've just got to have an inside backer from this cluster of five guys to come through and really become a player. And he could, but we don't know if he will.
The interesting thing about Martinez is something that, or what I should say is what stood out to me about Martinez is when he came on the conference call that was piped into the media auditorium, he said that his junior year, he was used as the more run-stopping inside linebacker. In other words, of the two guys in the 3-4, the two inside backers in the 3-4, he played more of the run-stopping role, and they had another teammate. His name is eluding me. He just got cut the other day. He's in the league now.
A Stanford guy?
Yeah. Gosh, I can't remember.
Oh, the guy who retired?
No, I think he just got waived yesterday. Mm. I can't remember.
Okay.
Anyway, his college teammate was more of the coverage guy. But then he said that sort of flipped as a senior, and he became more of the coverage linebacker. He said he basically played 100% of snaps, you know, first, second, and third down kind of guy. Ran, what, 4.67, right? Okay, so he's not blazing fast, but he's not slow. And I don't know. I just wonder if that coverage role, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is, how does the presence of Blake Martinez influence the role Joe Thomas may or may not have, if at all?
Well, he's so much bigger than Joe Thomas, you know?
Exactly.
I mean,
Joe's a safety, let's be honest. Joe Thomas is a safety, yeah, that they stuck an inside linebacker.
So I think they'd like to do better than Joe Thomas. So fourth round picks, they have Carl Bradford starting his third year. I still think he could be heard from. Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez. In the seventh round, you got Sam Barrington. Free agent, you got Joe Thomas. And free agent, we'll get to later, Beniquez Brown of Mississippi State. So you got six guys. They should be fine if you've drafted properly. You've spent enough. I mean, this isn't the greatest position in the world. You know, it's not the most valuable position. You got three fourth rounders and a seven there. in the last 3 years. You got to get it done. There's no excuses. Get it done and play the game.
The one exception to that would be that they didn't draft Bradford to play inside, right?
Correct.
Right.
But he's had 2 years now.
This will be his second year.
Right? Yeah, you're right. So he's had a year and a half at inside backer now.
Right.
Yeah.
You still think he might be heard from?
Yes,
huh?
I do. He's really a good athlete. I mean, he's a better athlete than the players we're talking about.
Yeah. I just, every time, and I wrote this in my, I did a chat, you know, the day before the draft,
mm-hmm.
and I keep going back to that article that you wrote last year in training camp where Bradford said, I just, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the article in front of me, but he basically said, for whatever reason, I haven't been able to conjure the same aggression and intensity that I showed in college. I know that's what the coaches want from me, but I just haven't done it. And I don't know, I haven't asked him about it. I'm sure we will ask him about it at some point. But to me, my first impression of reading that was that it almost sounded like a little bit of soul searching. Like, this is a guy that isn't sure what he is right now. And I don't just mean in football. Maybe he's thinking about other things. Maybe he's got stuff going on in life. It just didn't seem to me that he was as honed in on football maybe as he once was from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah. He was an introspective sort right from the first his
really
rookie
nice
year.
Guy. Very. Really nice guy.
And he thinks a lot, and he's willing to share his thoughts. And I agree with you, Mike. I forgot all about that story, but that was in August, I think, last
yeah.
year. Right?
Yeah, the end yeah. of training camp. Yep. I think it was going into the last exhibition game. You had said, you know, hey, what's kind of going on here? And he basically said, I know the coaches want me to play the way I did in college. I haven't done it, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the emotional side of things, the way he just went after it. And because he was a monster at Arizona State, relatively speaking, wasn't he?
Yes, he did. A lot of sacks. All right, so that finishes the, now 6 picks later in the compensatory section. They took a 5 technique, a defensive end from the Northwestern Wildcats, Mr. Dean Lowry, 6'5.5", 296, 485.
Okay.
What was your thought, Mike?
Well, the frame is massive. I mean, 6'5.5" is huge. You were explaining to me, and again, this goes back to what I said in the intro where I always ask Bob about a lot of stuff that I'm not familiar with. I asked you why a 5 technique needs to be, why you need height for the 5 technique. And the reason why is not necessarily because of anything the guy is doing himself, but because of the guy he's going up against. And when you're playing the 5 technique, you're going to be matched up against the tackle a lot of times. And we've seen some of these tackles that range anywhere from 6'5 to what, 6'9. You know, some of these guys are just monsters, monster men. And so if you're a small rusher, that's going to be hard. And so the 6'5.5 is important at that 5 technique spot simply to match the height and frame of a tackle as best you can. Now, that said, I think he's on the light side. 296, you agree? Too light?
No, I don't think so, Mike.
Really?
I think that's okay.
Okay. I would have thought that 305 would be the type of range they'd want, ideally.
And I think he can get there.
Okay.
You know.
He said he had added 30 pounds a year, didn't he?
Yes, he did say that.
That's insane.
I think he can get there. You know, better training, better diet, nutrition, all this. I think he can. Is it a reach? Yeah.
I've never seen the guy play. I honestly can say I never watched Northwestern last year. I didn't know anything about him when they made the pick, other than, you know, things I'd read online just in draft stuff.
Talked to some scouts after the draft. I mean, I had talked to people before, and then after the draft I talked to 3. They all agreed. They thought it was a round or 2 or 3 high.
Wow, yeah. As much as 3 rounds high.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. One guy had him as a 7. He's a big body. He's been productive. The 40 time is pretty good, 4.85, and he's really got pretty good athletic numbers.
Faster than Richard Rodgers. I keep using that as the base comparison for guys that are on the slow side.
I mean, you look at this, Mike, a 32.5 vert and a 9.6 broad jump, 30 on the bench. Those are all, he's a good tester. He has short arms, and he doesn't wow anyone with his change of direction, agility, that kind of stuff. Pretty productive. The short arms, 31-inch arms. That's abnormally small
that's
for that
really
height,
small.
Mike. That's a problem.
So who else was taken in the 131 area that could have maybe intrigued them if they wanted to go with another D-end? Anybody?
Well, this is where they didn't take the running back.
Right. They had Kenneth Dixon. They had Devontae Booker. They basically had their choice of non Derrick Henry and Ezekiel Elliott's, and they decided not to. I remember this on deadline. I said to you, they're going to take a running back, and it's going to mess with the story that I had just written. Yeah. I really thought they were going to take a running back there.
So they took Martinez. They traded 125 to do the Spriggs.
Right.
I mean, all these things have ramifications, and we're seeing it here. So then Martinez comes along at 131, and then the running backs went. Kenneth Dixon, 134, and Booker, the really good player from Utah, at 136. Now Green Bay's up at 137. All right, so you lost two. I don't even know if they would have taken one of those players. I have no idea, but I think they're pretty good leftovers right there. Now let's see what else is on the board. I really like this player, Ron Blair, an extreme tough guy from Appalachian, a five-tech. But he's short. He's 6'2", and I don't think they wanted short. I love DeAndre Washington, who
Me
went
too.
143.
I think he's going to be a steal.
He's a heck of a player at the Senior Bowl. He jumped right off that tape in the practices.
And he can block.
Yes, he can.
Pass pro.
I like Connor McGovern as a five-position backup O-lineman at 144. I like Caleb Beninock at 148, a four-position swing guy from UCLA. So there are players around. So they took Lowry, and there's other five techniques on the board here, too, at that time. I mean, besides Blair, you got a bunch of big guys. You got Giorgio Newberry, Sterling Bailey, Kamalu from Miami. All these guys have the same size as Lowry. And I know those three players weren't drafted. Kamalu was a medical. But still, I mean, in doing that pre-draft stuff, when I asked about a lot of five techs, those names are right in there with Lowry.
Yeah.
They weren't picked.
Right.
Okay, so they went with Lowry, you know?
Yeah.
And you give them the benefit of the doubt on their scouting staff. They know a lot more about it, but they don't know more about it than other teams, and some other teams said he was a reach.
Yep.
All right?
All right, let's take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll come back, finish up the draft, and move into some undrafted free agents.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, so now, Mike, they've got five players. They have two picks left, and they're sitting down there late in the five, and a lot of players are going. And they come up at number 163. With wide receiver Trevor Davis of Cal. What about this choice?
So I didn't expect them to take a receiver. Now, I thought they were going to certainly add a couple as undrafted guys, but I was a little surprised that they used a pick on him. A guy I didn't know a whole lot about. You know, Cal used, what, six or seven different wideouts with Jared Goff, the number one pick in the draft at QB. So it's not like this guy had a huge platform on which to shine. Blazing fast. What was it? What, 4.41. 4.41, and Elliot Wolf said they had him in the mid 4.3s as the time that they were using. And this is something that you don't often hear. We've seen guys like Darius Heyward-Bey, Ted Ginn, these speedsters that are often criticized for having poor hands. And I had never heard Elliot Wolf so effusive about how good this guy's hands were. Kept saying over and over again, he's got huge hands in terms of hand size. He makes great catches. He plucks the ball from the air. He's not afraid to go over the middle. Now, granted, this guy's job is to sell the pick, and that's what he was doing there. But he definitely set a pretty high bar in terms of catching the football for a fifth-round pick that did not have a lot of production and that changed schools and that was a walk-on at one point. Just an interesting pick there. What do you make of him?
I like the speed, so he's a match for Jeff Janis in that department. The highlight tape looks good. I mean, he's making plays down the field and making plays on little tear screens and bubble stuff. The hands. I believe Elliot Wolf on that. Two drops this year.
Yep.
His charter's had. I believe that. Yesterday I spoke to a guy. He said he had him as a fifth. He was the only one in the building. There are three other guys who graded this player, had him as a free agent. Davis.
Oh, okay.
Yep. He was the only one in the building, and he kind of laughed. And he says, well, I guess I'm right, suggesting that the Packers do a good job. But the whole rest of them had him as a free agent. You know, there's different opinions on everybody. And, we're not going to get off on that right now. But okay.
Were you surprised they took a wideout?
No.
Okay.
Uh-uh. a wideout or a running back. I knew they'd want to get a weapon, and so
this yeah, is... I thought they were going to go running back over wideout. That was my thought. Mm-hmm.
So he's thin, Mike.
Very.
He's got a thin lower body. Can he hold up? No one knows. Can he get off the jam? No one knows. Is he just going to get bodied around? He might. The comparable, you know, for me on one of these kind of a thin, spindly sort of outside receivers is Bernard Berrien. Played with the Bears later on. Just a, you know, a
Vikings
side,
too,
sideline.
Right?
No.
I think he did. No, I think he did.
Berrien?
I thought he did.
Maybe you're right.
Let's see.
And there was somebody before the Bears. But one
yeah,
of those
Vikings.
Who else, Mike? Who was first?
Bears and Vikings is only
That's
two teams.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, I remember.
Third round pick? Yeah, third round pick in 04, Fresno.
Yep. 78 overall.
How big they got him? 6'1",
185.
This guy's 6'1", 189.
Yep.
Tremendous speed, just like this guy. So, I don't know. If they could get Bernard Berrien's career out of Trevor Davis, it'd be great. Berrien was pretty good.
What was interesting to me is that immediately Elliot Wolf and others recognized the kick return numbers that he had, you know. And I just wonder, you know, people saying, okay, can he return kicks? Yeah, he can return kicks, and that's fine. But you look at the body type difference between him, Janis, and Montgomery, who could be the top three guys. Janis is what, 215, 220?
Yeah.
Okay. Montgomery is 215.
Yeah.
And then you look at Trevor Davis at 190. 15 pounds is a significant difference when you're playing a position that's asked to break through contact. And I just don't know if he can do it at the NFL level.
Well said. Can he make a tackle, Mike?
On special teams?
We know Jeff Janis can.
Yep. That'll be interesting to see. Now, you asked if he has ever returned punts.
Yeah.
He said yes. Elliot, I believe, and I haven't checked the transcript, but I had thought Elliot said that he caught punts in practice but never in games. I thought that's what Elliot had said. I could be wrong. But I don't know. Punt return doesn't strike me as significant a need. I mean, Micah Hyde obviously struggled, but, you know, they got Aberderis, they got Cobb, they got other guys they could use if they wanted.
Who do you like more, Mike, Lowry or Davis as a pure football player?
Boy, that's tough. Not within the context of Green Bay's roster, just as a pure...
Yeah.
Okay.
Pure NFL guy.
Lowry. Size wins.
I'm agree. I don't even have an opinion. It's so close,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you know, gun to my head, I say size wins.
Yep. Okay. All right. So, Mike, now let's go to the sixth round, their final pick. They're sitting down there at, where are they sitting, Mike? At 200. And they come up with the last tackle selected, the 21st tackle, 53 picks after this, no tackles. Stanford. Mike, Kyle Murphy, two-year starter. What about Mr. Murphy?
So, obviously, you know, another Pac-12 guy, another guy coming from a school that has a good reputation of linemen that runs the ball, plays a pro system, pro scheme there under David Shaw, the head coach. And, you know, I mean, the guy, we were laughing during his teleconference. The guy's a chatterbox, loves to talk. You know, to me, I think he could be a serviceable backup. I really do. You know, I didn't watch a ton of him, but I went back and looked at it a little bit. I like his size, 6'6 and a half, 307. So if he puts on a few more pounds, he's right at the weight of Bakhtiari and within a couple pounds of Bulaga. He's taller than both of those guys. For where they got him, I'm fine with it.
I guess. Is he better than... He's better than his brother. His brother went to Harvard, banged around with the Vikings for a couple of years. He's a tougher, more rugged individual than the brother. He's got that going for him. He started 2 years, one on the left side, one on the right.
Correct.
He's a little stiff. He's not real, real big. He's got some toughness. He's got some technique. Would you have rather had a tackle here, Mike, when you know you got Don Barkley as your fourth, if you want to keep four? Or would you have rather gone back to that five tech to some of these other people that I mentioned that didn't get drafted? The Bailey, the Newberry, the Kamalu, all of them went. And maybe the Packers tried to sign those guys as free agents, but you know didn't get it.
Were there any edge rushers left?
Golly.
Because the only reason I say that is when you look at the D-line, yes, they're going to be without Pinnell. for four games. But let's assume that we're talking about week five and after. Pinnell is back. Daniels, Kenny Clark, Guyon, Josh Boyd, Lowry.
Yeah.
That's six guys I just mentioned, I think, if I can count correctly, or five.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a pretty healthy rotation. Where I'm a little bit more curious is Peppers and Matthews, fine. Elliott and Perry. You never know what you're going to get from Perry, and Elliott is unproven as well. Fackrell, we've already raised the questions about him. I might have been interested in another flyer on an outside backer there. And the only other reason I say that is because let's say that there is a catastrophe at inside backer, assuming the worst. Does Clay eventually get moved back because they just need it? I think that's a valid question to ask at this point because the inside backer position is so unproven. And that said, I might have taken a flyer on another edge rusher.
All right, Mike, let's see what edge rushers were around. Stony Brook's Victor Ochi. The guy had a ton of production. Wasn't drafted. There's got to be a medical. I have no idea. I don't know. But there was some good things said about him to me before this draft. McAllister from Florida went in the seventh. I think it's Florida, maybe Florida State. I mean, the guy can really rush. But, I mean, he's a character risk. 6'6", 242, 476. He went in the seventh.
Now, Ted obviously went very character strong in this draft, given the reputation of the schools that he picked guys from. But as we'll get into in a few minutes, there were some interesting characters that he took as undrafted free agents. So it's not as if he's completely character averse. It's just that he prioritized his draft picks a little differently than the UDFAs.
Southern Utah had two guys drafted, Killebrew the safety and Sims the corner. They had another guy, James Couser, an edge rusher. 43 and a half sacks, Mike, in 4 years. 6'3", 247, 476. Couser was undrafted. Now, I know he's a hard-charging guy. I mean, I know he's not tremendous athletically in a test and all that. I have no idea if he can win as a rusher, just like Fackrell. But he was undrafted. All right, so they took Murphy. Will Murphy make the team? He might not. He might be practice squad.
Yeah,
very possible. All right, now they're out of picks, Mike. There's 53 picks left, and this is when they started getting on the phone big time, and they attacked free agency.
And we'll take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and explain how some of that went down.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So the draft ends, and, you know, we're writing stories and things like that, and one of the things that, you know, all of us try and do is chase down these undrafted guys. Every year the Packers are going to bring in a whole fleet of guys that didn't get drafted, and oftentimes they bring in more than others because of Ted's desire to sort of inundate the roster with youth. And so what do? Well, we're scouring on Twitter and searching and trying to find any mention of guys that may have signed with the Packers, and then we try and call agents and things like that. And so over the course of a couple days, we chase them all down. And what do we got, 21 of these guys, Bob? Is that what the number's at now?
Yeah. It's a record, Mike, for the Ted Thompson regime with a 90-man roster. Back in the day when they had unlimited, 115, 120 would show for the start of training camp. There'd be more, but 21. Usually they're at 13, 14, 15. Why so many? Fewer draft picks, six.
And they just
bunch of veterans not re-signed.
Yeah, exactly.
Quarrelous at all. Okay.
Now, okay, I wanted to ask you, do Goodson and Pinnell count against the 90-man roster?
Oh, yeah.
But they won't count against the 53.
Right. They can practice, you know.
Right.
They can do everything during camp.
But their spots do count on the 90 and the 75. Okay.
Yep, right. Okay, you want to look at some of these guys?
Yeah, let's go through it. You wrote your big opus today on, you know, breaking down each one of these guys. Well, sort of tell people how
by position.
But let's tell people how this comes together, how your big thing comes together.
You know, we get the names, and then I get some phone numbers and talk to these guys. I don't have a whole lot of time. They're more than willing to talk, just about their background a little bit. Get their measurables. Talk to a couple scouts, some I've talked before the draft, and in this case, some after the draft. I certainly didn't ask before the draft on all these players. A few I did. and try to give the reader a little bit of a look at this guy. And hopefully you kind of got an idea what the kid says, what the kid's like, and what he's like as a football player. Let's start at wide receiver, Mike.
Okay.
You got four of them. You got Herb Waters of Miami. Let's start with him. Waters is kind of a leader, captain kind of a guy. 5'11 and a half, 190, ran 4.5 flat. I think he's really a good player.
Seems like it from everything that I read. You know, he produced basically from the day he stepped on campus, and now his numbers aren't, you know, leading the country or anything, which is why he didn't get drafted. But, you know, he averaged over 20 yards a catch as a freshman on 10 receptions. So, I mean, is 10 receptions a big number? No. But to average 20 yards on 10 catches is not easy to do. Was steady, reliable, looked like he improved just about every season of his career. And yeah, I think he was probably at the top of their free agent list, I would have to say.
Yeah.
Or maybe not, you know, number one, but in the top two, three guys they wanted, probably.
Yeah. Geronimo Allison came from Illinois, a JC guy, played 2 years at Illinois, pretty darn good numbers, 6'3 and a half, ran in the mid 4.5s. Not bad.
Yep.
I mean, he catches the ball in his hands. I think he's got a shot.
Think so, too. Yep.
All right, let's go to Devontae Robinson from Utah State.
This is the guy that really interests me.
4.32, Mike.
That's, I mean, that's blazing.
He ran it twice on Pro Day. You know, I can't remember where he started. He started somewhere else. JC, played 2 years at Utah State, didn't have great production. You know, nice size, 6'1", 190, that blazing speed. Okay, the knock is that his toughness, his professionalism, his work ethic.
Yep.
It didn't allow him to succeed really out there. But
he checks off the height, weight, speed boxes, as you wrote in the paper.
Yep. All right. Parks from Rice.
I don't know too much about him.
Very smart receiver. Possession, chain-oriented, chain mover kind of a guy. 4.61, so he's not going to burn you deep. He's been in a good program. Not a bad free agent.
Okay.
All right, tight end. They signed one. David Greenidge from NC State. Really a big guy. 6'5", 261. But really, he's not a Y. He's not an inline guy. He's more of a slot, all over the place, moved H-back kind of a guy. Tremendous hands. Not a blocker. Questionable toughness.
Yep.
That's Greenidge.
Yep, I remember seeing Greenidge play a couple times against Syracuse over the years when I was still in college. You know, never really wowed you, but can make a play every now and then.
I made a mistake in the paper today. I asked him why he came out a year early. He said he was holding his child. He's got a two-month-old son. I wrote in the paper a two-year-old son.
Okay.
We corrected it. A reader pointed it out.
I wonder if he expected to be drafted.
I asked him that, and he didn't have any strong opinion on it. All right, tackle. They signed Josh James of Carroll College, not down in Waukesha, Mike, out in Montana. There's two Carroll Colleges. NAIA club. Called the head coach, and Josh was sitting in the head coach's office.
Really?
Yeah. 6'5", 310. He's got good strength numbers. He's really a good athlete in the jumping things.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't played anybody yet, but he's got some numbers. He's worthwhile. He's a smart kid.
Yep.
We'll see. No guards, no centers.
Yeah. Definite vote of confidence, I think, for Lane Taylor, who obviously they re-signed. And also, I think, I was a little surprised because they've got some guys on the roster, sure, but Josh Walker didn't really wow me last year. I mean, in training camp, I thought he played well, but in the season, obviously, it was a little bit of a disaster. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was a little surprised.
All right, QB.
Yep.
Our colleague Tom Silverstein knows everything about Joe Callahan of
Wesley. Yep.
However, I have a bone to pick with Tom.
Uh-oh.
When Tom was referring to Wesley, he had parentheses, Mass. It's in Delaware. Did you know that, okay, Mike?
I did know it was in Delaware, but I didn't remember that Tom had written Massachusetts.
Where in Delaware?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Wesley College. The Whitewater and Mount Union of the East, according to Callahan.
Dover, Delaware.
Dover, the capital, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
One Northeast scout said he had never heard of this player. One personnel director yesterday said he had never heard of this player. So the Packers they either see something nobody else did or, you know, whatever. I don't know. Or they're chasing ghosts here. Callahan, 6-1 only. Unbelievable numbers.
Yeah.
Very successful team.
Threw for like 600 yards in one game, as Tom wrote in that story. Just silly stuff.
Yeah. Good kid. We'll see. Okay. Running back. We got a couple of them. We got Don Jackson from Nevada.
Yep.
2-year starter there. Had 2,200 yards, I think it was. A tough inside-the-tackle runner.
Yep.
How about Jackson?
Well, you know, I was Googling around a little bit, and it looks like I found the story from the Reno Gazette Journal, the newspaper out there in Utah, and it talked about how this guy had a really, really interesting upbringing in that he was a little bit of a problem child, was involved in all the things you're not supposed to be involved in with violence and fighting and things like that, and there were a lot of people that thought he was going to end up in jail, thought he was a bad egg, that kind of thing, and it seems like, anyway, he started to turn himself around a little bit, so good for him. But there was a point in time where a lot of people involved in this story thought that he was certainly headed toward the negative side of life.
Hmm. Okay. That's Don Jackson. Okay. Now they got another back from Troy, Mr. Brandon Burks. Now, Mike, you don't know anything about DeJuan Harris.
I'm familiar.
Are you? Okay. Yeah. DeJuan in the 2012 playoffs of the last month, he was the Packers' number one featured back. Everybody who came in contact with DeJuan kind of really liked the guy and was pulling for him. I believe he's out of football now. Burks came from the same school, and one scout said that probably a more well-rounded player than DeJuan Harris, but not as explosive or sharp-cutting. I mean, Harris had a lot of tools, Mike.
Yeah, he did. Is he still kicking around?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Burks is short, 5'8.5". I think he had almost 3,000 yards in 4 years. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
I don't know too much about him. Can't say I watch Troy.
Okay. I asked Boniquez Brown about him last night because they played during his career. They played a non-conference game. He said he was a tough guy.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, let me ask you this. I know fullbacks are not a plentiful resource in today's game, but John Kuhn remains unsigned.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't bring in anybody. They didn't draft another running back. Is that a little bit, you think, of a vote of confidence for Ripkowski?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Yep. All right, no five techniques.
No.
Let's go to the nose. We got two of them. We got Brian Price from Texas San Antonio. My son worked there for about 9 months, selling football tickets down there.
You've been on that campus?
I have.
Not so nice, or?
On the 4th of July weekend.
Swampy.
Average high, about 107.
Ugh.
Tried to play golf twice.
Well, that's a mistake.
Got eaten up by fireflies. No. Fire ants.
Okay.
You ever have fire ants, Mike?
One or two times, yeah.
We don't want to get in. That's a bad, bad experience. Right next to a sand trap. It was horrible. Good experience in San Antonio for the kid. All right, Price, he's a huge man, 325. He didn't start till he's a senior because they had another guy, Mabry, ahead of him, who's made the Saints, hung around with the Saints last year in practice squad, and he's back for another year. Price, he's an interesting cat. I think he's got a chance.
Okay.
Mr. Tyler Cooter from Idaho State. Tyler is a very strong man. He told me about all his strength accomplishments. A nose and a five. He's going to play nose here. Strong guy. We'll see.
Yep. He was a guy that had some bigger offers coming out of high school, but was an academic non-qualifier.
Really?
Struggled on the ACT. So he ended up at a very small school. I don't even know if it was Division I, and then he transferred to Idaho State.
Montana Western in Dillon,
yeah, that's
Montana.
That's it. Yeah. I don't even know if that's Division. I don't know what it is. FCS, I couldn't.
Probably NAI with the Carroll League.
Yeah, it might be.
The Carroll Saints.
Yep.
That'd be fun to watch that, cover that league, wouldn't it? Okay, inside linebacker. We got Boniquez Brown from Mississippi State. 2-year starter, declared a year early. Gone up from the combine 229 to 238. Inside backer, played every down, doesn't test well. Very tough guy, very instinctive, made some huge plays on special teams. Boniquez Brown.
Obviously played in a tremendous conference, you know, playing in arguably the best league in the world for college football. You know, so he's going up against the best of the best. He's a guy that I would probably put near the top of their list as well, guys they wanted.
Just don't know if he's got enough athleticism to
yep.
do it.
Yep.
All right, Manoa Pakula of BYU. Mikey ran 4.56.
Is it interesting to you that they took so many guys from BYU, Utah State?
Yeah, they really did.
They really, and it seems like their undrafted guys sort of follow a certain pattern. They always grab somebody from Miami. They always grab guys from Utah, you know, Midwest area. I don't know. Interesting. Because, you know, they had Robertson Daniel.
Yeah.
They had Ladarius Gunter. So that's one each Miami, from Miami, yeah. one from BYU. And then this year they've got, what, three guys from Utah State?
Do they?
Fackrell, Robinson, and I think there's a third, isn't there? Or maybe it's just two.
Maybe.
Because Pakula was BYU, right?
Yeah.
So three guys from the state of Utah. Interesting.
Good football out there, Mike.
I guess.
I saw Pakula live last year, BYU at Michigan. Ooh, I asked him about that game. They got drilled. It was probably their worst. He said it was the worst game of his career there. All right, Pakula, 4.56, undersized.
Yeah.
In and out of the lineup. He ran a foul to the BYU honors code.
Faster than Devontae Adams, I believe.
What about the BYU honor code, Mike? You know much about that, baby?
I've read a little bit about it over the years.
How can they recruit?
I don't know. It's interesting.
All right, so that's Pakula. Now let's go outside. We got Reggie Gilbert from Arizona.
Yeah, another guy I don't know too much about.
The Wildcats team MVP this year.
Really? Wow.
Played DE, four-year starter. It's going to have to stand up here. Flash player, inconsistent, 14 career sacks. I don't know. Okay. Corners. We got McKinton Dorleant of UNI.
Yeah, you wrote about him the night of the draft.
Like him, Mike.
Yep.
As one scout said, extremely competitive. 5'10 and a half, so he gives up some stuff at the break point. However, he runs good, 4.39. He's feisty. I could tell talking to this kid. He really wants it. I think he's a good player.
And they had another corner drafted.
They did. DeAndre Hall went in the fourth to the Bears, kind of a cornerback safety combo.
Now, you've done this a long time, and I think maybe this is an obvious question, but if you're a small school team, and you have one guy that is a draft-eligible guy, you know, or a draft-graded guy, I got to think that that helps you throughout the year because teams are going to be coming in and looking at you, and you might see somebody on tape that caught your eye. And I have no idea, but I would guess that's maybe how Dorleant got discovered by the Packers. They might have been looking at tape of DeAndre mm-hmm. Hall,
yeah.
you know?
Very
it's got to help you.
Got to, no doubt. Yep. When I asked Dorleant about Hall, oh, he was all just, you know, loved his friend, his partner, yep. and all this. Yep. Okay, Hawkins from East Carolina, Josh Hawkins. Again, a really fast guy.
On the small side.
5'10 and a half. Up and down career, started. He can run. He's got measurables that he won't look out of place on that practice field. All right, Jetty from UMass, Massachusetts.
Is that what it is, Jetty? I didn't know if it was Jetty or Jeet.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Or Jete or something. I don't know that.
I don't either.
I'm guessing. All right. So this guy.
From the island of Martha's Vineyard.
You ever been there?
No. No. Been to Cape Cod, which is near there. But
I said to him, there's a lot of mansions on that thing, right? I've never been there. And he says, but I'm not up and out from the mansion side.
Yeah. He's from a small town on the northern side of it. Yep.
He said, if I did, I'd have my feet up somewhere. Okay, more. He could describe himself as a gamer. He thinks he's faster than when he ran at Pro Day 4.61. So we'll see.
Yep.
Okay, Warren Gatewood. Interesting story. Came from Alcorn State.
Now, you were just talking to somebody from Alcorn State recently, weren't you?
The guy from Racine Park, Jordan Payne.
Yep.
Jordan, I don't know if he got signed. He wasn't drafted. Wish him nothing but the best. Wants to teach math in Southeast Wisconsin, Mike.
Cool. Good
elementary
for him.
Elementary school. He's
That's
quite
pretty
a kid.
Cool.
Quite a kid. Jordan Payne. Really like talking to him. All right. Gatewood, good guy. Grew up in Baltimore. I think he was 95 pounds as a high school freshman.
So was I. 5'1", 95 pounds freshman year of high school.
You can relate.
Yeah.
Made the team as a junior, never played.
Okay.
Somehow he wound up in Chicago for his senior year at Gwendolyn Brooks Preparatory College School or something.
Okay.
Grew between the junior and senior year, all of a sudden got his speed that he hadn't had since age six. That's what he's telling me. He says, I'm kind of a late bloomer, to say the least.
Sure.
Played in some all-star game at Soldier Field. Got some attention of Alcorn. Some Alcorn guy got a tape, signed him. Played at Alcorn. Two-year starter at corner, 1 year this year at safety because of injury. He's ready to go. Warren Gatewood ran 4.51.
All right, how about the safeties?
Let's go to Demond Smith, Georgia Tech. He thought it was all done at Pro Day in March 18, I believe. Pulled a quad on his 40. Thought it was over. Just saw a million things in front of his face. He was really an honest kid. But teams kept calling. They liked his tape.
Yeah.
He couldn't work out for almost a month.
And your story, I believe, in today's paper said from one scout at least gave him a draftable grade.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know. He can run pretty good. He's even played some coverage in the slot as a nickel.
An option quarterback in high school. Did not play defense in high school.
He didn't play D at all?
That's the impression I got from reading his bio.
Wow.
Or if he did play defense, they didn't mention it at all in his Georgia Tech
bio. How about that?
They only mentioned offense.
Did he go there as a QB?
That I don't know.
I wonder. Yeah, okay.
I mean, they do run an option system, so it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, Kentrell Bryce from La Tech.
I'm interested
down there
in this
guy. Played with Vernon Butler, Kenneth Dixon.
Yep.
32 teams at Pro Day, and where's La Tech? In Ruston?
I don't know.
Okay.
Heck of an athlete, right?
Wow. And the one scout who went through there in the fall that I talked to, he did not expect this at all. And the team, the club, the university did not expect him to do this. But 4.43, 42, 11.2 or 3, unreal numbers. Didn't play to that stuff, according to this guy. He's an average tackler, but, boy, with numbers like that, he could really help on teams, and he might make a run at it.
No doubt about it.
Finally, on special teams, you got a punter from Minnesota, Mr. Peter Mortel. Three-year starter for the Gophers, career record holder, 44.0. Did the holding. Green Bay Notre Dame High School. His dad is the official timer. What would it be? You'd say he runs the clock? I don't know how you'd put it.
Yeah, clock operator.
Yeah. And his grandpa did it for years before that,
yep.
The Mortel gang at Lambeau Field. So he's trying to make it with his hometown team.
All right. Now, I know that you didn't focus on these guys and that Tom and I wrote about it a little bit more, but do any of the tryout guys interest you at all? Because I got one name that intrigues me, and I'll tell you why.
Mike, I draw the line there.
Okay.
I'm not even dealing with the tryout guys right now.
Okay. Savon Huggins. Okay. Now, that's a name that any East Coast listeners might remember. This was an unbelievable running back prospect coming out of New Jersey. Number one player ranked in New Jersey, I believe. Went to Rutgers. Completely stayed at home to go to Rutgers. Completely never lived up to his potential. I mean, the guy had offers from some of the best schools in the country, went to Rutgers, nothing, okay? Where does he end up? Northern Iowa, with Dorlant, with DeAndre Hall. And he turned in a good season. And here he is, trying to make the best of it now. Let me see here. God, I'm trying to pull up this article. That's why I'm talking a little bit in broken speech here. So here it is. So the guy's got 40 scholarship offers, including Alabama, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Michigan, Notre Dame, Penn State, Rutgers, South Florida, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, South Carolina, Stanford, Boston College, California, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on forever. This was a prized recruit, one of the best running backs in the country coming out of high school. Obviously, almost nothing has gone his way since then in terms of the on-field stuff, but interesting to me because I knew him, watched him play against Syracuse a couple times at Rutgers. I'm interested to see if he's got anything in the tank.
Yeah.
Total flyer.
So you'll be checking him out tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Definitely.
Okay. There could be, in some years, they've had as many as 40 of these 72-hour weekend camper guys.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know if there'll be that many this year. We'll find out tomorrow.
Okay. Let's take a couple questions here. Let's see. Who are some of the better UDFAs that should compete for the 53? We've gone through that. You know, we've given you our thoughts on those guys.
Right.
In Bob's depth chart, he had Dayton Jones as a defensive end. Could he be considered an outside linebacker? That's an interesting question because that's something McCarthy said. He might switch to an elephant rusher this year, could be used more as an outside backer, could certainly fill the void left by, at least now, the absence of Mike Neal. What do you think? Where does he end up this year?
Yeah, I mean, I had to put him in just one location. It was almost a coin flip. Whoever asked us that is dead right. I don't know. I just don't know where he's going to be, but I agree, Mike, he could do both.
Okay. Oh, boy. Which wide receiver or two does not make the roster? Gosh, they're just it's a logjam. It is a complete logjam.
13 guys, Mike.
13 guys. I mean, in terms of guys that were on the team last year, I think Aberderis is certainly in the most grave of the positions. I think his spot is the most in question because you have Cobb in the slot. Montgomery is rumored to be able to do what Cobb can do, was a higher draft pick, performed better when he was on the field than Aberderis did. And even though Jared came on well at the end of last year and started to contribute a little bit on special teams, I think he is in the biggest danger.
Yep, I don't disagree.
Okay. This is a good one. Do the Packers not drafting a running back, in other words, because they didn't draft a running back, does that mean they have a little confidence in John Crockett? I think so.
To an extent, you also have Cobb and Montgomery who factor.
Very
right?
True.
As Tom pointed out yesterday.
We didn't get a chance to see this, and I don't know if you remember, but does Crockett have the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield? We saw him so limited on such a limited basis, and he didn't do that. But I don't think he's really viewed in that way.
No, I don't think he did much of that for the Bison.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Trevor Davis or Jared Aberderis, I think we just answered that one.
Yeah.
I'm leaning Davis there. Let's see. Boniquez Brown and Blake Martinez, we went over that one, but we thank you for that question. Let's see. Is cap savings the most likely reason why Mike Neal isn't being re-signed? I don't know. You know, I think that they certainly... I don't know how much money Mike Neal wanted. You know, I really don't know. They got Perry for 1 year at $5 million, right? But Perry was a draft pick, and everyone knows how Ted gives the benefit of the doubts to higher draft picks. I don't know.
Neal was a two, Mike.
Was he?
Yeah.
And Perry was a one.
Right.
Okay. I don't know. I really don't know.
A lot of people want to know about Mike Neal. You know I like him. I've written this.
I do, too.
Said it.
I do, too.
He's a hustler. I cited his pressure numbers, tackle for loss. He had 8.5 career high.
I was surprised they didn't bring him back. I'll say it.
He's 28 years old.
Gives him an opportunity to put his hand down in the sub a little bit.
I gave him a B minus. I gave Perry a C.
Yep.
I mean, this is that's 5 months ago when it was still fresh and we knew exactly what had happened. You know, he was mentioned in that Al Jazeera report, Mike, right, Mike? The
Certainly.
Documentary report. And what did that basically say?
That he had taken a banned substance. I think it was he was linked to HGH, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if that played into it.
And painkillers were also discussed in the story. I don't know.
I think the painkillers were relative to Matthews.
Okay.
I think that's
All
what
right.
it was.
Who knows if that's scaring off the Packers or other teams. I don't know.
Now, just for the sake of fun, because we've discussed this game before, but... If the game against Washington does not happen and Perry does not play his tail off against Trent Williams, a tremendous player, how would that have influenced his offseason? It's fun to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he had showed not much if you take that game away.
Right. Last impressions can be last the longest, you know?
Agreed.
Yep.
Totally agreed. All right. Is there anything else we want to talk about or have we talked ourselves out?
I think we're done, Mike.
I think so, too. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in to the Packers podcast, as always. We'll talk to you again sometime soon, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Turn me loose, set me free. Somewhere in the middle of my time.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.